This is a HeadGum Podcast.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
So, Frida Pinto is like, I thought this was a romance movie. And I put down the camera and I'm like, it is. You love being chased by these dogs. And it's like, it's called Dog Escape. It's like, why did you sign on?
Right in front of you, yeah.
Hey!
What up, what up?
Welcome to Hollywood Handbook and Insider's Guide to Kicking Butt and Dropping Names in the Red Carpet Line to Back Hallways of this industry we call showbiz. It was another week in Hollywood, and we spent it here, and we spent it observing and watching the way people work and behave.
We report back to you, you know, we're out there and we're getting all the information, and then we collect it all in our little sort of jars that we call our brains, and then we come back and we open up the jars and unscrew the tops of our heads, and we let the information out through talking.
And one feature we like to do sometimes, just sort of to get warmed up in terms of helping people, is called Engineer My Career, where we let the engineer ask us a question.
It's like, so nice to have the engineer here as a true everyman, and any question they have, we feel that a lot of the public could have, because they really are in a place where they're sort of at the bottom and they could do anything, you know?
A lot of people were hit very hard in this financial crisis.
Katrina, Hurricane Katrina.
And ended up, yes, losing their home and to some kind of environmental disaster and having to do something that
is not that glamorous.
Yes, in normal circumstances, you
you would turn your nose up at.
Not do. And today, we're very happy to have Engineer Sam with us. Engineer Sam, what is your question?
My question is, so I've been here since November.
That's your question?
Oh, no.
Have you been here since November?
Not a very good use of the one question.
People could learn a lot from
this. It was clearly a question, right? There was a very hard question inflection at the end of it, right?
So I've been here since November? That's him. It's like, I fucking guess, man. Not exactly your secretary, not keeping your calendar. Not a useful way to spend your question when you have literally just one to ask two of the finer minds in the modern media landscape.
I apologize. If I could go again, could I go
again? If you could, wouldn't that be?
Yes, could I go again? That's a question. Okay, could I go again? Well, the answer is dream fucking on, dickweed.
And it comes back to the lesson that we've given before, which is please come prepared with a good question when you have an opportunity like this. And that also applies to like how you dress. You know what I mean? Like when you show up for something like this with, you know, with like people in a who are in a position to maybe help you, like maybe wear something that like fits your body.
What would you change about the way I'm dressed now?
It's just like, maybe it is actually the body that is.
Yes, and this is sort of what I was going to say when you were saying be prepared. It's like success is 90% preparation and 9% perspiration. And 1% is just look like you look good.
The like, perspiration from
we
like.
We want to be able to look at you.
Going to the gym like every like once in a while.
Yeah, you perspiration know? And some of it's inspiration. And that's like think about that. You know, you're not. There's nothing inspired about the way you dress. You and your body is a.
It's a
disaster.
Joke. It's a joke.
Oh, that's mean.
And thank you, Engineer Sam, because I think a lot of people are getting a lot out of this, and not everyone's so brave to have a stupid-looking body and get on here and ask us just the worst questions. Couldn't possibly help you to know whether you've been here since November. And why would I know that? I know how to make successful movies.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to really crack people up with a ripping good joke. Do I know how long you've been here? So we're going to move on to the next thing we wanted to talk about, which is, you know...
Movies.
Yes, movies, big and small.
One of our favorite things in this business is sometimes you can go see a movie, and if you like it enough, you can see another one of that movie. And in this business, they call it a sequel. And there are some sequels being made this year that we're excited about. We looked at the slate. And so there's a little segment that we like to do called Sequel, Sneakquel, Peakquel, which is where we take a sneakquel peakquel at some of the sequels that are in the mix for this year.
Yes, and the first one that we wanted to go over, Hayes wanted to describe this one because he, of course, was involved in the original successful project, and he is just so excited that they've decided to continue. There's two reasons they make a sequel. One, made a buttload of cash. Everybody wants another taste of the piece of the pie. Two, they screwed up. They got to do it again. We've talked about that phenomenon before.
Mm-hmm.
This is the former. It's called Two More Bigger Guns. If you remember Two Guns, and I believe I wasn't in the room, I believe that some Wahlberg wanted to be Two More Guns, Denzel wanted to be Two Bigger Guns, and Hayes, if you want to tell the story, I think you finally cracked it and said, guys, let's make it Two More Bigger Guns.
Yeah, and having seen this movie because I made it and was involved in it, and knowing what it is, I could say that the first movie, where we left those guys, once they invented guns, and you know they each had one, and it was sort of, I think, about the competition between Remington and Smith & Wesson, and like which of the two gunsmiths was going to be like the most famous and make the most money in business.
Mm.
Now, then this new one with the bigger guns, it's flash forward to the present day. And now these guys have been frozen for a long time, and now they're two unfrozen cowboys.
Juicy.
Trying to make their way in the present day, but not really understanding the horseless carriages they see in the streets, but still shooting guns a lot and being very good at shooting.
Yes, and I love this concept. I love this take on it. And to make it present day and to deal with so much of the Putin stuff that's been happening and to have that be the backdrop that there's always a TV on in the background and he's always sort of doing his stuff.
And just how they're sort of talking about it the way we do.
Yes, but also the way an unfrozen cowboy
trying,
would do.
Yes, trying to understand a political crisis when the country of Russia is not really something they were familiar with, or maybe I guess it would have been, but certainly not the Ukraine or possibly that too.
And just even phones.
Yeah, like what they think of phones is actually an interesting look at like what's so crazy about phones in the present day. It sometimes it takes a voice from the past to look at the present and say, like, is this really right? Like, You're looking at these little beep boxes all day. Like, shouldn't you be out in the fields, like, enjoying life? And a lot of people listen, they don't take them seriously at first. But, it's actually a lesson that we could all learn from these two old cowboys.
And the character of Beepbox, the tiny robot butler who is helping them in the past and in the present.
Mm-hmm. He froze
them. From, yes, he's the one that froze them. And he's from the moon?
Yeah, he's from He is Japanese in his behavior and his voice, but yes, he's a robot who
comes from the moon. I loved having that character to sort of stop down and explain the plot every few minutes.
Well, he is, because he's Japanese, he is very smart and he's very good at following some of the complicated things that are happening to these cowboys, and also in the on the world stage as we keep following.
Well,
the
yes, but I just remember I was watching and I would not know why something was happening, and Beepbox would kind of go, "Let's freeze," and you know that's funny because he froze them,
right?
And then he'd come down and say, "You know, Mark Wahlberg is a shooting because he is so mad." And I would go, okay, because I was like, why is this guy shooting?
Anyway, the movie is very sad.
Yeah, it's a 10 hanky movie.
You, I know, were really excited about, and this is sort of the other side, I guess, like, you know, this movie did not do as well the first time.
We so
you,
close.
Of course, yeah.
It was not my decisions right. that made it not yes. work, yes.
But it sounds like there's a lot of exciting stuff happening with the girl with two pearl earrings.
Yeah, absolutely. So, having seen this movie and really knowing what it is and what it's about, I couldn't be more stoked to have another crack at what was truly just one step removed from, I think, being a mega hit. So you all recall in the original, the girl has a rock on her ear. She thinks it's a pearl. It gets stolen by a mean crab. She chases the crab into the sewer. She's in the sewer. She meets a whole family of like alligator people who live down there. She marries one of them. He kisses her so hard that he bites part of her jaw off. She decides she can't stay in this marriage. She goes back up, finds the crab, actually. He gets the rock back. It's not a pearl. And where we left her off kind of at the end is she's going, well, if this isn't a pearl, should I have married that, you know, crocodile man or alligator man? Should I never have left? Because that was part of why she left, you know? The reason I think it didn't work is because a lot of the alligator people's movements were too stiff. It wasn't fluid, and that's because I wanted to do you know, Henson creature type creations and do it practically, and a lot of people involved were, you know, wanted it to be CGI.
It's all computers now.
Yeah, it's all computers.
Just, yeah.
And it's like, we don't...
How about what happened to something you could hold in your hand?
Just because you can do something with a computer doesn't mean that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
And I say that about writing, about going on the internet, about raising a
kid. Playing computer games.
Playing a computer game is like, sometimes the best way to play a computer game is just get a deck of cards and just start doing it. So... for me, I thought, let's get the puppets, but let's also take another crack at the story and see, did we do a disservice by not giving the backstory of how some of these crocodile men are friends? And I think we did, because I want to see them, you know, playing croc ball, which is like baseball, but they whack a ball with their tail, and it's bigger than a baseball. It has stitching, but it's like not as big as a soccer ball. It's very heavy. They have tough hides, so they don't have to worry about using pads as much. But how do I describe croc ball? So, okay.
And the ball is alive. It's like a rolled up bug.
The ball's, yeah, it's like a giant roly-poly bug, and it has stitches into it. They've sewn it into its rolled-up form, but it's saying things like, "Hey, Buster!" Like, "That's a heck of a whack, and can't catch me, nerd!" So the ball is kind of part of the comic relief. Also, there's one fat crocodile man, mm-hmm. and that's very funny, too. Mm-hmm. He's bursting out of his vest. So anyway, we thought showing a lot of their life and maybe eliminating the girl and maybe eliminating some of the pearl earring.
Okay.
So it's called Girl with Two Pearl Earrings, mm-hmm. As kind of a nod to the audience saying, we heard you the first time and we're doing what you wanted.
The decision to – she's not in it much.
No, she does make a cameo.
The decision to recast, because it was Scarlett Johansson in the original.
Yeah.
And now it being Ken Jeong, what went into that choice?
When we found out that Ken was Tech Avail, I absolutely said, we've got to get him. And it was a big sort of whining and dining meeting with Dr. Ken.
Did you know that that he was a doctor?
He's a real doctor.
He's not just called like Dr. Ken like a joke because he's Japanese. It's like he is.
Yeah, he is a real.
He went
to medical school, got the doctor certificate, and has the stethoscope and everything. And I thought that was something that would really bring a lot to the production because you don't have to pay to have a medic on set,
mm-hmm.
and also because he is Japanese, he is so
mm-hmm.
smart
mm-hmm.
and able to. Do a lot of things that a Scarlett Johansson can't exactly do.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of people getting sick living in the sewer for 4 months on your shoot.
Yeah. I wanted to do the sewer practically before it was a build. It was on a soundstage and it didn't feel authentic. And the audience responded by making us take a bath financially.
And then taking a bath, I guess, non-financially after being in the sewer.
Yeah. Yeah, every day when I got home, I would have to really scrub up, really clean up. And I thankfully am healthy. The same can't be said for a lot of the crocodile men, certainly for the croc ball who had to splash around in the muck. It was Andy Serkis.
He's amazing. What a genius.
So good. The main crocodile, the romantic interest for Ken, who, you know, as you said, Ken's the girl. He's not in the movie a ton.
Mm-hmm.
She's not in the movie a ton. But the main crocodile, we did get Michael Fay, who's the man who was caned in Singapore a few years back for doing graffiti.
Oh, sure.
We were able to get a hold of him, and he's pretty irreverent.
What a rich experience he could bring. Having known a lot of Japanese people in Singapore and, like, really understanding how smart they are and, like, how funny it is to talk to them.
Yeah, and so it's a smart movie. It's a funny movie. We think America's going to we hope that you accept our mea culpa. We missed a little bit on the first one. Thanks mainly to the bad decisions of one Mr. David Fincher. And now we got that fucking hack off the project and we're doing our thing and we think you guys are going to just gobble it up.
We'll be right back with our guest, Rob Corddry. You may recognize him from TV shows. He's been in the movies before.
He lives on the same street as a friend of mine.
And he's going to talk about that and some of the TV shows and the movies that he's done coming right up on Hollywood Handbook.
Hollywood Handbook.
So I said, she goes like, it's called a plantain. And I go, look, Crispin Stewart, to me and everyone else in this room, it's a big banana. So you either start calling it that or you get the fuck out of my green room. And she apologized.
Hey! What up, what up? Welcome to Hollywood Handbook, an insider's guide to kicking butt and dropping names in the red carpet line back hallways of this industry we call showbiz. Great guest today.
Great guest. Big fan of ours.
A huge amount going on for him. Rob Corddry.
Hey guys, here. Thank you so much for having me on this show. I've been listening forever. You know, when you guys, when it was what it was, its iteration before podcasts, you know, when you were just like,
just having just conversations,
holding just those round table.
Remember conversations?
At places.
Yeah. Remember that when you were we at. Actually spoke to each other.
Instead of.
Yeah, instead of just.
Like taking iPad photos and stuff. It's like.
Yeah, instead of just everybody's on their Kindle all day.
It's, you have to look at each other. And FaceTime doesn't count. It's not the same thing.
No, it's really not, because it freezes sometimes and you get stuck making a funny face.
Rob.
Go ahead.
You got a huge amount on your plate right now.
It's going. Things are going great.
You have a show.
Yeah. Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you talking about the many shows that I actually have? Or
no. I'm talking about that one.
Just the other. The show in development that you're hoping will replace all those shows.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right.
Because all this time. You've been doing, like, the goofy things.
The goofy stuff. The stuff you're goofing around.
Where you're, like, a clown.
Right. Yeah.
What is that one?
That one's Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So which you know it's what
like,
I mean.
Which you never, like, worked in a children's hospital or anything. That's
no,
just, like,
I
for
don't
funny jokes.
Know anything about that world, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because mm-hmm. I do want to apologize to all the real children's hospitals. And just say to everybody that it's nothing. It isn't. There's a lot of talk that's nothing like a real children's hospital at all.
And but you hear about these kids making themselves sick so they can
go to a children's hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm never there
eating
unless
bugs.
My children are really fucked up in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've cut themselves.
Or fell off a thing.
Fallen off.
But
things.
Then is that good source material for you?
Yes. Yes. For sure. For sure. You know what? It's funny. The last time I was at Children's, I ripped is, it gives you the wrong impression, but ripped my daughter's shoulder out of her socket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it really, it was just this funny, weird thing. And we had to take it to Children's to get it popped back in.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was there, this is a really funny story. Mm-hmm. I was in the you know, waiting room for the emergency room, and she's crying, and I'm just surrounded by all these like parents who are weeping, and there's like a kid being like, it was like a TV show, really.
Yeah.
A kid comes in, they burst him through the door, he's on a stretcher, but the stretcher's really tiny.
That's so cute.
And there's a life flight pilot, like, pushing the thing, and, you know, because he's been flown in on a helicopter because there's no way they're going to get him here in time anywhere.
Wow.
And it's like, there's blood everywhere, and everybody looks really serious, and I'm just like, God, this is the stuff right here, man.
All you see is stories.
All you see are stories, and I'm like, this is going in the show.
That's writing. It's observing.
Yes.
That's all it is.
Right, gathering. Just observing.
Write what you, for the most part, know.
Sure. Yeah, and it's creating those scenarios that you can observe, whether it's ripping your daughter's arm or
what did
whatever
your daughter
you
do
need.
to deserve that?
Oh, no. Like I said, it was a total fluke. It was an accident.
Oh.
She does this thing, and it's really cute, where when she tries to talk to me at dinner, which for one is no-no.
Yeah.
That's a no-no.
That's
we
eating
call that a
time.
No-no. That's eating time, and it's just looking down and being thankful for your father who works his fucking ass off to bring you this food, right?
Yeah.
And then when she did speak, okay, she had food in her mouth.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So already I'm like, why are there words being spoken right now? And then they were fucking
words
with like food smacking
food
in it. So
that's a double whammy.
You know, the closest thing to me was her left arm.
Mm-hmm.
And I just gave it this yank. And later on, we just laughed about it. But
sure.
At the time.
Well, she must have been like, thank you. You know, that's a mistake you only want to make once.
She gets it. No, she gets it, right? And having kids is just hard.
Mm.
Yeah, we know.
We have a lot of kids.
Yeah, we have too many.
Mm-hmm. But now, I guess, the thing that we really wanted to talk to you about today, something that's very rewarding for you, it's pilot season.
Mm-hmm.
You have your new show.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Pilot season.
Your show, based on your own life experiences,
right.
Your own crazy family.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's called Rob?
It's called Rob or The Rob Show
mm-hmm.
or mm-hmm. featuring the show featuring Rob.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know Rob Schneider had done Rob with like an exclamation point.
Yes.
And so you were going to do Rob with either a question mark or a semicolon?
Or a semicolon.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized I don't know how to use, like, this is a show, this is an honest show, and I don't know yes. how to use a semicolon at all.
And you don't have to.
That's exactly. But I thought, well, it'd be dishonest of me to put that kind of punctuation, the punctuation that I don't understand,
sure.
in the title of the show.
Is honesty important to you in your work, Rob?
Yes, absolutely.
Speak on that.
100% honesty all the time. And that's mm-hmm. why this show has been brewing and percolating and marinating
mm-hmm.
and all the things that you do with ideas
mm-hmm.
In my head for years. And I feel like with all these other little silly hospital shows that I do, that those are just like I'm swinging three bats in the batter's box,
uh-huh.
and now I'm stepping up with one really light bat, and I'm just going to knock it out of the park.
Wow.
Mm,
what a nice feeling.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
an image for me.
And I don't mean like, I mean the bat too. Like the bat's going to fly out of my hands.
It's so light.
And it's going to go out of the park too, like
yeah,
even
yeah.
farther than the ball does, and it's going to
wow.
smash a windshield
Maybe
of a car.
Maybe an eagle catches
and
the
that's,
bat. Yeah,
and
flies
and that's,
away
yeah,
with
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
And that's points.
And I put a note on the bat. I put a note on the bat, and like a secret, and then whoever when the bird drops the bat, and then
mm-hmm.
the person reads the note, they'll get it. I mean, I'm not going to tell you what. Maybe you guys will get
I'd love to be there when that note gets read.
Yeah,
should we read?
Yeah, let's break in it. So Rob is going to be a show that follows you and your crazy family.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Cordrys is the working name
okay.
for the family.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But of course, network will have notes, I'm sure.
And how does that break down? You have one daughter who's kind of fucked up, and you have
one daughter
uh-huh.
who is severely handicapped,
yeah.
who misbehaves a lot.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a Chicano wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
she
funny.
She's 100% Chicano.
That's very funny.
Right, yeah. And that's in my real,
just
that's
imagine,
my real life.
No, wow. but yeah, but just imagine.
Imagine the like, imagine a Christmas morning in that household.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, you've got ham, she's got tamales, and who's going to win this one?
Well, no. That's I'm glad you brought that up. She's not actually of any sort of Latin descent.
Oh.
Right? Because one
okay.
day, she asked me, what is Chicano mean? Like, mm-hmm. what is a Chicano? And I said, I don't fucking know what a Chicano is. I don't care about that kind of thing. And so she looked it up on Wikipedia, which we have always by our bed. We have the
yeah,
whole set.
The whole thing.
The whole set right
cool.
by her bed. And she looked it up, and Chicano is apparently a self-described term that the indigenous Mexicans that have grown up in the southwest United States give to themselves. So it's a self-described name. And so she decided to describe herself as Chicano.
So anyone can do
anyone
it.
Can,
anyone can make the it. Choice, you know?
Hey, I didn't think I was going to learn today.
What a racket, because
yeah.
they make it seem like it's so hard to be one. But
yes.
really, it's just a matter of saying
you
that
just
you
say
are
it.
One.
I mean, that's, yeah. as one Native American, that is very frustrating to me.
Of
because,
course.
Of course, heritage is very important, I feel like.
Yeah,
so
sure.
to just say it. It's not really the same thing as being it and doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, on one hand, yes, but on another hand, no way, absolutely not. Right?
Right.
The,
yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like there's two sides
to
the opposite is true as
right.
well, and there's, even maybe
and that,
truer.
Mm-hmm. Two sides to every coin, as
mm-hmm.
they say.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what makes Two-Face such a powerful character.
Mm-hmm. Right. Who is also Two-Face? You're referencing the script.
Mm-hmm.
Two-Face is also the villain that lives next door.
Wow.
I live next to a Batman villain.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, we have that kind of relationship where we get along, but he's fucking, his face has been mutilated and he's
sure.
angry about it. And he's a really evil guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's such a great moment in the pilot. And do we want to go to that scene
yeah,
where
sure,
you're
yeah.
returning his lawnmower?
Okay.
Do you want to read Two-Face?
Yes, I'll do
Two-Face. And I'll read Rob?
That sounds great, okay. Yeah. Exterior, Cordry lawn, Two-Face is trying to mow his front lawn, but he realizes that he doesn't have a lawnmower in his hands, and he yells out angrily.
You're beautiful.
Rob! Oh, great. Yeah?
Why am I not holding my lawn mowing machine?
Huh. Let me think about that, Mr. Face. Maybe because it's still in my garage.
Well, that's why I'm so friggin' pissed!
Oh, no. I know what's coming next.
Two-Face reveals a large dollar coin, half of which has been scratched up with a knife.
I'm gonna flip this coin, and if it lands scratched upside up, I'm gonna boil you in a big pot! Ting! All right, just give me a lawnmower back.
Ah, so, and that's the scene. That went through many different workshopping stages.
Yeah.
And then it just ultimately became, you know, what it was, what the actual story was. That just really happened verbatim like that. Funny story about Two-Face that a lot of people don't know. He's a huge gay.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that will show up. It doesn't show up in the pilot.
Both parts of his face are gay.
The whole deal. The whole dealie. The whole package.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because so much of him is conflicted.
Yeah.
But in this case,
there's one thing
about him that
he's 100% consistent on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You'll find that out as the season goes on. Like that he actually lives with a man, an older gentleman who's an associate professor. At UC Bakersfield, a professor of history, and he's just a real curmudgeon. He walks with a cane, and he's really sweet.
Mm.
And
is that
feminine.
Donald Sutherland?
Well, Hope, right?
Sure.
You know,
it sounds like him. It sounds like it was written for him.
Sounds like it fits him.
I know. He's not all set up on email yet, so I have not been able to get in touch with him.
Yeah, that's been a problem with us for Donnie, too. Yeah.
Now, go a little deeper into your actual family makeup. You have the one daughter, but I know that's not the only.
That's not the only daughter
in your house.
No, there's my daughter.
There's your Chicano wife.
My Chicano wife. There's my mother, who lives in an RV right outside my house, right on the street, and. That's going to be probably the second episode where the whole thing is about how it's street cleaning day and she's got to move the damn thing, but she forgets how to drive all of a sudden.
Right. Yeah. She's got dementia.
And you guys see where, I mean, that's just goes exactly where you think it's going to go. I drive it to the other side of the street.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Sure. After a bunch of hemming and hawing, I bet.
Lessons are learned.
Sure. Yeah.
Like she relearns how to drive.
Thank you.
In the process. So she's learned, there's a moral to it.
That's really nice.
If you live in a moving vehicle, you should know how to drive.
And so much TV now forgets to do the lesson part.
Yeah.
Where they have somebody drive, but they don't talk about how you drive.
They just show up already knowing how
right.
or something.
Yeah.
And then you don't see any change. There's no arc.
And so that way it's not a tool, is it?
No.
You know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things. I set out to do this show is that in my life I learn a lot of lessons.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like a vessel. I'm like an empty lesson vessel that I want to fill to the right where you think it almost looks like the lessons are like there's a bubble on top and it, and how is that not spilling? It's because it's because I just want to suck down more lessons. That's my life. So every episode to this show is going to be a very special episode.
And you go out in the world and you see a problem, like all these people getting street cleaning tickets. You walk down the street and just windshields littered with street cleaning tickets.
Literally.
in this city and in every city in the world. And you say, like, what can I do? Like, as a writer performer, like, how can I?
What can I do? I'm not the governor. I'm not the mayor. Mm-hmm. You know. And what you can do is you can
just
educate.
A storyteller.
Yeah,
but it's not just a storyteller.
Just
it's actually
a storyteller is minimizing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty big thing to be.
Gosh, I mean, there's a lot on our shoulders.
Yeah,
as story, we have a big, big responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Now, your character loves his own car quite a bit.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Talk about sort of the romantic love triangle that develops between you and your wife and your car.
Right. So my character loves fucking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fucking, sucking, the whole thing.
Feels amazing.
Exactly. And that's what I want to sort of bring. Like, I want that sort of visceral, like, I want you to feel like, when I'm fucking on television, that you're right there getting fucked.
You're getting it.
You're doing it. Yeah. You're getting the whole thing.
Or if you're not taking it, that your dick is my dick,
exactly.
And I'm imagining that I'm fucking what you are.
Exactly. Well, it is what you make it, right? Because we bring our own life to the stories we reach.
And that's why the POV scenes, I think, are some of the most interesting.
Well, it's 90% POV,
mm-hmm.
Which some said was crazy, and others said, this is stupid. And then others still said, I'm not even going to say anything about this idea. I'm not going to even tell you what my opinion is. And then some people were like, great. And I listened to those people because they are doers.
If one person, I feel like, gets horny from like a show, from something, I've done my job.
Right.
You know?
Well, so I have a very, very charged sexual relationship with my Chicano, my white Chicano wife. And I also have a very, very sordid relationship with my 1975 Ford Pinto wagon because it has wood walls.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you've never seen in a show before. I mean, fucking a car, sure. There was a whole show. It was a documentary, quote unquote, about guys that like fucking cars. But you've never seen it the way I do it, which is just fucking the longest scenes in television history, I hope, of me just laying into that car, man. Just laying into that car, you know what I mean?
Like, should we do that scene?
Yeah.
Yeah,
let's read it. Let's
and
go
this
ahead.
Is just me. But if you want to do the car sounds, because the car is on, all right, and the radio is on as well.
Okay.
Playing.
Yeah, great.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Fuck yeah. Oh, God.
Room.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Stop. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Turn the heater on. Turn the heater on. Oh, you get the fucking heat. Okay, you notice you do too much.
Are you sick of paying too much money for your auto insurance? Call 1-800-646-AUTO to get better prices on your auto insurance.
I can.
The garage light turns on. Mrs. Senora Cordry enters the garage.
Rob, what are you doing?
I am having sex with my 1975 Ford Pinto wagon. Or at least I was until the lights came on in here.
Oh, Rob, please don't waste your massive sexual energy on that car. I need it to satisfy all of me. I'm so horny, baby.
Now, can I ask about this character? Her concept of Chicano.
She takes it to the limit.
What's her source material for what she thinks a Chicano voice is?
Whew, she goes like a lot of Vietnamese refugees from the 70s.
Sure.
She heard it one interview on YouTube with one who was severely burnt. And basically it was just this little girl crying and saying words every once in a while. And that's what she based her accent on.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't even know if Chicanos have an accent. So it's kind of like it's a squirrel's nest. It's whatever you want
to
do with it.
It's part of the self-description of just being able to say, this is who I am and I get to decide what it is.
Mm-hmm.
What an inspirational lady. What else is in the show?
Oh, well, of course, Grandpa's in jail.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
For killing a cop.
Yep.
And so there are some nice reunion scenes where you go to meet him, and
he sort of
seems like maybe you killed the cop and he took the fall because he's so old.
Yeah. Definitely. That is actually should not even be subtext. That should be understood.
You guys do say that's what's happening, but the tone of it, I didn't know if you were joking with each other.
I'm still tweaking that storyline. Yeah.
You tugging your collar a lot when you're talking.
Yeah, a lot of gulps.
Yeah, you keep winking at him. Right. And
So I guess when you see it, it will be clearer than just reading it on the page. Sometimes reading something doesn't fully bring it to life. And that's, he's sort of the character, he's like the wise old grandfather in jail character that you see, like that trope.
Yes, yes. A trope that, have we seen it a billion times? Yeah. Is it still great?
It works for a reason. It's you see it a billion times for a reason.
Yeah.
And that's why it made so much sense for him to be black.
Yes.
When it would normally make sense for someone related to you to be of a different race, but he's also very wise and like...
But
like,
listen to what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So...
Hayes, you did say that.
I did.
You said it. I don't remember anything else you said except for that. I zeroed in on that.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's pretty wild, right?
So you hear when you said that, now you really kind of know what we mean.
Yeah.
Now, your character hates cops.
Yes. Hates all law enforcement, including cops. Yeah.
And that's from your real life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I studied to be a policeman.
Uh-huh.
I was pre-law, and then I was post-law, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I took the exam, and they said, no, you're too fat.
So you were pre-law to be a
law enforcement officer, because I wanted to know the law before I enforce it.
Yeah, sure. People always think being pre-law only means you can be a lawyer, but it's any kind of law stuff.
Yes.
It really... I mean, how could you go out and be a policeman without knowing what the law is?
Yeah, and yet, you know,
better not just be guessing.
You better
know
not.
What? There are so many policemen out on the street that have no idea. They think their whole job is riding around, smiling, giving out candy, and fucking wearing Oakley's on the back of their head. You know what I mean? Like, that's what they think the job is.
They literally think that.
They think it and then do it.
Yeah, and that's what you're seeing.
Well, yeah, no, I want all cops, all law enforcement officers dead. I want them all dead. I want to end them all when I see them, like a rage, a boiling, boiling hot rage.
And that's what makes that scene where you do get pulled over so tense in the pilot.
Yeah.
Should we do that scene?
Yeah, let's run right into it.
Great.
All right.
Sir, do you know why I pulled you over?
No. Why don't you tell me?
Well, you had a taillight out and it's kind of dangerous.
You know why my taillight was out? Officer? He, finger quotes in the script right there.
It looks like there's a hatchet sticking out of the back of your car. Hmm? So I think it's out from the hatchet that you... I guess jammed into your taillight.
That's exactly right, officer. Wow. You must have gotten a good sleep last night because you know what's going on with my car. You just described it. I was also taking hatchets to all sorts of shit that you don't know anything about because you're not in my life. You don't know me. All you see is me. You look at me and you see a hatchet in my taillight.
Sir, you seem agitated. I don't know what you're upset about.
Sorry. It's because I'm drunk. And I am a bad drunk.
Okay, let's stop before one of us says something that we can't take back.
I hate black people.
Hey.
Something like that?
Yes, that would be an example. I mean, if you're just giving an example, that's okay. But hey, look... I was maybe out of line. I saw the hatchet. I overreacted. I don't want to be the bad guy here.
Oh, wow. Are you done with your power trip yet? Are you done with your power trip?
Look, if you feel like I'm in the power position, maybe I get in the car and sit down. You get out, talk to me through the window.
Let's
I don't
do
want
that.
To, okay.
the door opens.
Yeah. Should we move in? Okay.
God, this is gonna this takes a long time because we do it in real time.
Yep. And then
the seatbelt has to come.
And at the seat. Yeah. Exactly.
There's a bunch of holes in this seat. It looks like you've been fucking this car a lot, sir.
Yeah. Get comfy.
Okay.
But not too comfy. If you start fucking this car, role play over.
All right.
Because this is my car. Hey, do you know why I pulled you over?
Is it about my taillight?
Yeah. It's about your taillight.
Okay.
And I hate you. And I hate all cops.
But now you're a cop.
Right. Now you're learning. Now you're listening. And you're learning.
Thank you.
What a really nice scene.
I feel like there's still some tweaking to be done on that scene.
I don't think so.
Because it doesn't really end.
I don't think so.
Should it be longer?
It may want to be longer. And you may want the cop character to make fewer choices. Just in terms of what he's doing. And you might want him to be more passive. Because it just feels like he's driving it so much. You're the main character. Let's have an active protagonist. And let's make sure that the cop character is sort of just there.
Yeah. He sort of takes up from that point. That's what was so interesting.
You're right.
The cop character drives away.
Drives home in your car.
In the car. It sort of becomes.
Yeah.
He starts living your life.
I'm left on the side of the road and the rest of the show, it breaks into two shows.
Yeah.
And there's a spinoff, a backdoor pilot, we call it.
Sure.
Where the cop has just taken over my complete identity, mm-hmm. and I spend 22 minutes by the side of a road.
Just trying to hitch.
Just trying to figure out what happened, and no one picks up hitchhikers anymore.
No, yeah, and you talk about that a lot. You have
That's
a pretty
all
long
I
monologue
talk
about how...
That's all I talk about.
Hitching just ain't what it used to be in this town.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, there's the one... sort of triumphant final scene that I sort of felt really uplifted by, where you and your weird daughter mm-hmm. have a lot of conflict mm-hmm. through that pilot episode.
Yeah.
Each sort of fighting for like who's like dominant in the house.
Right.
And then there's the fist fight between the two of you
yeah.
at the end where you like really yeah. show her who's boss.
Yeah, but it's really, that's one of my favorite scenes mm-hmm. because I think it's got the funniest joke in the whole show.
Mm.
It ends with the funniest joke, and it's, which I think, if I may say, is pretty brave, because the whole scene, there's nothing funny happening at all. I'm bashing her in the face with my closed fist, right?
Mm.
Just
oh,
bashing
yeah.
her and
punching
her.
The fuck out of her. Yeah.
Bashing her and bashing her. And at the end, I say...
Do you want to, well, should we just
okay.
run it and we start with the bashing?
Okay, great.
Okay.
Great.
Okay.
It's another one.
Ow.
And another one.
Thank you.
What is that, 100? Make it 101.
Yes, uh-huh. I'm learning from this.
Oh, your head and face were so soft to begin with, and now I've made them softer.
And you're so strong.
Oh, take that.
Oh, this is gonna help me.
Oh, my hand hurts. I'm gonna switch hands.
Oh no, not the other hand.
And then we just fight mm-hmm. for a page and a half, and then here's the joke. Now I'm done. I hope you learned something. Wait a minute. I don't know if this blood on my hand is yours or mine. Now get the hell out of here.
Okay.
That's a nice joke, and
well, and it shows that you are a family.
Mm-hmm. It's a joke, too, that you've heard a million times.
Yes.
You know?
Well, that's what's comfortable for me.
Yeah.
I hate when these people are trying to do new jokes
right. mm-hmm.
in some of these shows.
Right.
And I'm like, well, how am I supposed to know if that's a joke?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean, Rob?
Mm-hmm. You have to telegraph it by doing a joke that has been done a million times, I think. Sometimes that's just one of the tools. In
yeah.
your toolbox.
Will you speak on that? The different tools?
Oh, my God. Well, you've got, in the toolbox,
mm-hmm.
right? So let's imagine that it's an actual toolbox, right?
Oh,
it's
yes.
a big
I'm
red toolbox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you open it up, Or you try and open it up, but it's locked. Because you lock your toolbox full of tricks, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you got to fumble around with the lock for a minute, right? Mm-hmm. And then you...
Wish I had a tool to open the lock.
But it's in there. Yeah, but it's in there. But it's in the toolbox. Yeah. So you just have to somehow get it open. And let's say it's with those big, big fucking metal shears. That'll cut through anything.
Bolt cutter, yeah.
Yeah, bolt cutter. Yeah. Thank you. And then you open it up, you get it open, and there's another bolt cutter there, which is irony, which is a tool in your toolbox. And then you take off that shelf that is just full of irony.
Yeah.
And then under it, there are a bunch of devices.
Ooh.
Oh, no. Uh-oh.
Sounds
spooky.
There's a... ticking clock.
Oh.
Okay. Yes.
Like a bomb.
No. No. A ticking clock.
No. A fake stopwatch.
It's a device, a storytelling device. And there's also a bomb.
Silent bomb.
So a silent bomb.
Right.
So you spend all trying to disarm the clock. But
any
the bomb
way you can.
But
was,
the bomb was the true threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's just, and that is.
And isn't that
surprise?
A red herring?
Mm-hmm. A red herring.
Yes.
Surprise, you got a red herring in your toolbox.
And that's comedy. Comedy is.
Comedy is
about
only
surprise.
Surprises. We've said it so many times.
It's only surprises.
Uh huh.
And I surprise people sometimes, like we were saying, with jokes that have been done before.
Sure.
That's a surprise.
Surprise
if
that
like,
it came back. They
I can't
thought
believe
it was done.
I can't believe he just did this joke that I've heard Paul Rodriguez do on stage for 20 years.
Sure.
Mm.
But he did it, and that's a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just what I do.
Well, thank you so much, Rob. I mean, just for you to speak to our audience and educate them on, it's just so important to write from your own life. We see all these people out here trying to invent shows and imagine shows.
Mm-hmm.
That's cowardice.
You're living in a TV show.
Yeah.
Just write it down.
And it's like they spend so much time writing and imagining that they aren't actually going out and fucking doing
How
it.
How many times have you heard some of your bros, like you're toking some weed with a couple of your bros, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God.
Oh gosh.
If we could,
busted.
If we could just film this conversation, it would be better than any TV show. And I say, only if I'm one of the guys in the room talking shit and smoking a fat doobie.
Right. And that's the point where you have to negotiate to make sure that
it's all about negotiation.
You actually get a prominent role in that conversation show.
No, you fight. Like, you got to fight for it.
And then your agent
and
has
some
to come
of the
in.
That's what it's about. Your
jokes,
lawyer.
The reefer jokes are some of the funniest ones.
Sure, because you're the most famous. Of all your bros, like your bros aren't really that famous. If it's going to get on.
A lot of them are not.
No. If it's going to get on TV, it's.
I'm not going to hang out with a famous guy. I'd like to be the funniest, most famous guy in the room at all times.
Sure. But isn't it amazing that how some non-famous people are actually like, very funny.
Oh my God.
Just that's like, a good point. That's a good point.
My friend Brian from my hometown is so funny, and I almost feel like he could have done like a really funny thing with his life.
Yeah.
And it's like how you weren't the funny, like he was.
He was actually the funny one between us when we were younger, but then I turned out to be the funny one because now I'm on TV.
Right.
And is that funny?
And isn't that sort of what's funny about just the way life goes? And a lot of it's just about being brave and having the fucking balls to pony up to the table and just go, hey, look, this is fucking my big honking dick. I'm going to lay it out there and try to make you laugh. And actually having the cojones and the nuts and the stones to do that. And I think Brian didn't have that. I think that's why he's pumping fucking gas.
He was too scared to pony up to the table.
And he didn't pony up to the table and he didn't lay it out there and he didn't have the cojones or the stones or the nuts. Mm-hmm. Speak on that, Rob.
I don't know Brian, but I do know this. Mm-hmm. If he didn't pony up and fucking lay it all out there, then he's not only going to be pumping gas, he's going to be pumping gas like on Christmas Eve and Christmas morning because that's the worst shift.
So many people trying to get gas.
You're always out of gas.
It's really frantic.
Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible shift.
And it's cold.
And they're in their church clothes.
It's cold because it's December, December-ish. And then
the tips are that time of year are actually very good though.
It's the best. It's the most magical time.
Financially, yeah.
Financially, by far the most lucrative because people are just in a generous mood when they're handing out money. But it's snowing.
Well, Rob, again, just thank you so much for coming in, and we really appreciate it. If you want to plug anything, do you have anything coming up, a live tour or maybe an album? Or?
No, I'm on Twitter, at Dwayne The Rock.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so find him there. Please do like our Facebook page, rate us on iTunes, give us a high rating, and then write a nice review about us. Mm-hmm. Get on the forums. Don't be scared of that. And please buy the pro version. Hayes, who bought the pro version this week?
I think the Narnold bought it again this week.
I think someone named Pat Smear.
Oh, no, that's right. Sorry, the Narnold. Pat Smear bought the pro version
bought
this
week. Bought the pro version.
And what does he get? It must be a good prize.
Yes, he definitely gets a good prize.
Speak on that.
I think the prize must be Rob Corddry explaining what is funny about your name.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. So Pat Smear is the Caesar's name.
And I have a lot to say.
And you go ahead and lay out for him what makes that so good.
Yeah, yeah. Over like a breakfast.
Yeah, guys are going to sit down. Or
just right now.
Or on air, live on air.
Okay, first of all, your name's probably Pat, right? And Pap Smear is like a thing that chicks do with their vagina. And all right, so there you go right there.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio. Boom.com. The wolf dead.
That was a HeadGum podcast.